Greetings, greetings once again to all my enemies and all my friends. You may have heard the news, but stand by now for the worldview. It is the Weekly Worldview, and I'm your host, Doug McBurney. Welcome back. It's the show where we don't take calls. We don't tolerate sponsors, but we do help focus you on the events of the week through the lens of original thought. It's so good to have everybody back as Bernie Sanders is burning down the house, as they say. Bernie Sanders, that's right. Naked Socialist has won a primary. What was it? A caucus. He'll win a primary next week. Anyway, it's terrifying to think that an open, naked socialist can actually run in public as a socialist and win. It's terrifying. We'll get back to the politics. I want to start in Miami with a story out of the Fall file. The Fall, yes. The Fall. Over in Miami, they've got a neighborhood called Coconut Grove. And apparently, the peacocks who live in Coconut Grove have been something of a staple in the area. And tourists like to come and take pictures of them. But what's happened now is that the population of overly aggressive peacocks has burgeoned to the point where it's become quite a problem, especially for the locals. They say they're dealing with large pyramids of slimy poop and aggressive males. Yes, and birds that swoop down unprovoked with their talons outstretched. That's right. Hey, I've been attacked by a peacock, as has my extremely attractive audio engineer. We've both been attacked by a peacock. I do not recommend peacocks as pets. But they are good looking. And the females are all right. It's the males that are a problem. So the people down in Coconut Grove are dealing with a bird that before the fall was just beautiful and friendly and nice. But since the fall, the birds get, they get aggressive. And then they say that there's the poop, there's the dive bombing, and then there's the shrieking. This is funny. The editor of the local newspaper, I'm sorry, there are no local newspapers anymore. Tom Falco, the editor of the Coconut Grove Grapevine blog, said that if you've never heard a peacock call, it almost sounds like someone is being murdered, which is so true. And then the males love their reflection in cars, and they tend to scratch cars. One peacock, they say, pecked and scratched the entire surface of one city employee's entire Toyota Prius. Shredded. This peacock shredded a Toyota Prius. Anyway, I have a Toyota Camry that has been treated to the peacock treatment. And so I can never sell that car because it looks like it was put through a paper shredder. The paint job is just so shredded. So I own that car forever. That car and me will go down together. The peacock population's got out of control down there in Coconut Grove. So the city says that they are going to begin trapping and relocating the peacocks from that neighborhood. And so somebody else will have to deal with the problem. Anyway, so before the fall, you see, peacocks were just all wonderful and good. There was nothing bad about the peacocks. Which brings up another question about, that's a question I can't ask. I can't ask this question that just came into my mind on the air because it's kind of disgusting. So I think I'll discuss it with my pastor first and see if it's something that should even be addressed in public. Do you have things cross your mind? And then when you're on the air, sometimes you just got to check yourself and say, well, wait a second. That might come across the wrong way. I better wait on that one. Anyway, I have a question about something before the fall, which I believe in, by the way, literally. I believe in the Garden of Eden, literally. I believe in Adam and Eve as literal people. I believe they actually ate fruit from a tree that God had actually told them not to eat from, and that the entire universe then broke. It fell. And so there's a, and I have another story here from the Fall file. Another story from the Fall File. Yes, out of Greeley, Colorado, a team of scientists at the University of Northern Colorado believe venom from venomous snakes could possibly carry the cure to cancer. That's right. Venoms apparently can attack human cancer cells in unique ways. So the students there at UNC, UNC, were given access to hundreds of snakes from all over the world, and they're stored in a secure facility, so don't get scared. Yeah, right there on the campus at UNC up there in Greeley. And the students extract the venom from the snake and study the compounds and proteins that are present in the venom of the snake. Yes. And here's, listen to what, let's see, I've got, is this a student? Or is this a professor? Let's see here. Dr. Stephen McEssie, he's a professor at the UNC School of Biology. And he says of snake venom, he says these are compounds that have evolved to kill other animals, you see. And it turns out they're a logical place to look for therapeutics. So Professor McEssie, he looks at snake venom as if it accidentally evolved by chance through random mutations and natural selection to, and which is, it's the wrong place to start, obviously, because the, can you imagine how much more advanced science would be if scientists looked at everything from the point of view of everything at one point worked perfectly and very good, and then it became broken. How can we look at what's broken and fix it? Instead, they start from the wrong premise that this all evolved through natural selection. And so Darwinism will go down, and I'm not the first person to say this, but I want to say it just to make sure you hear it, because you might not have been listening to the other guy. Darwinism will go down as one of the greatest retarding factors in science in the history of mankind. One of the top three retarding factors into scientific progress in all of human history will be Darwinian evolution. But anyway, despite themselves, because the creation is so magnificent, and there are amazing proteins to be found in snake venom, despite themselves, these scientists may very well cure some sort of cancer with snake venom, and I think that's pretty cool. So maybe before the fall of man, snake venom had valuable purpose. You know, maybe before all that, if they even had venom, you know? Same with viruses. Before the fall, viruses may have played an important role in the repair of DNA. Anyway, it's all very interesting stuff. And if scientists especially looked at things from a creationist perspective, I think we'd probably have our flying cars by now. That's what, I'm going to blame Darwin for the fact that I never got my flying car. All right, let's see here now. Back to the story from CBS in Denver. Venoms have been used since the 1950s to treat things like high blood pressure. Each venom in different doses we now see react to cancer cells in unique ways. And the scientists say killing the cancer with snake venom isn't very hard. The hard part is not killing the patient at the same time. That's the challenge. Well, there you go. Right? Isn't that the way it goes, right? Yes, we can kill your immune system could kill the cancer too, but it would kill you. So, and you'd think that intuitively people would realize that, well, that doesn't seem to be working perfectly correctly. But no, they just assume that it's an evolutionary accident. And the scientists up at UNC in Greeley will be flailing away in the dark. Instead of homing in on the facts more quickly and curing cancer more quickly, they'll flail around in the dark, the Darwinian haze, until they accidentally stumble backwards into something that they could have fallen forwards right into on day one. It's just embarrassing and sad. But there you have it. All right. So from there, as we discuss the fall of men, the fall of man, the fall of the universe. That lands us solidly in the justice file, where we go to Corcoran Prison in California, where one Jonathan Watson is currently serving a life sentence for a 2009 murder conviction. Now, the San Jose Mercury News is reporting a story on Jonathan Watson, and they do not get into why he is in prison, except that it's a murder conviction. They don't get into the details of who exactly Jonathan Watson murdered back in circa 2009. But the story I'm about to tell you about, the San Jose Mercury News gets into detail about just who Jonathan Watson murdered last week. See, he had recently been given a lower level security classification. He was moved from level 3 to level 2, meaning that he got transferred from a single person cell into a dorm style living situation. They call them pods in prison. So he was living in a dorm style pod at the Corcoran Prison, whereas he had been considered dangerous enough that they locked him alone in a room, apparently. So anyway, he moves into the pod, and 6 days into his stay at the pod, he writes that a child molester moved into his pod. Uh-huh. Let's see. They give his name here. I'm not going to name these. I'm not going to name this child molester because I don't need to. He's convicted child molester in prison, and he moves into the pod with a murderer. And not only did the child molester move into the pod, he began watching PBS Kids in full view of other inmates. So here's a known child molester turning the TV on to PBS Kids in front of God and everyone in prison. Well, Jonathan Watson, convicted murderer, was quite offended by the fact that this molester was watching PBS Kids on TV. So the next day, he told a prison counselor that he needed to be transferred back to level 3 before he kills one of these child molesters. That's what he said to the prison officials, to a counselor. But that counselor dismissed Jonathan Watson's feelings that he expressed, that he shared with the counselor. He dismissed him. So anyway, after Jonathan Watson, convicted murderer, returned to his pod, along comes another child molester had moved in the meantime. So now there's two child molesters in the pod. And after Jonathan Watson returned to his pod, along comes molester number one and put his TV right back on PBS Kids. So one of the other prisoners said something to the effect of, quote, "Is this guy really going to watch this in front of all of us?" Unquote. And then Jonathan Watson says, "I recalled saying, don't worry, I got this. And I picked up a cane and went to work on the child molester." So Mr. Watson beat the child molester to death with a cane. And then he left the pod to go find a guard to turn himself in. And on the way, he just by chance encountered child molester number two. And he said, He said, you know, I figured I'd just do everybody a favor. And he took the cane and he beat child molester two to death as well. And then in his interview, or the letter he wrote, he said, "In for a penny, in for a pound." Okay, yeah. If you matriculated in the government schools, go look that up. In for a penny, in for a pound. So Watson says he will plead guilty to both killings if the state decides to take him to court, and has hinted that he may try to kill again if he is housed with child molesters in the future. And so, you know what is disturbing and unpleasant about this story is that even amongst thieves and killers in prison, there's a common sense agreement among everyone that we cannot tolerate child molesters. It's understood. It's a part of the fabric of their civilization that they have there in the pod in prison. But out here on the outside, where the inmates run the asylum, we seem to have lost this common fabric that there's certain things that simply cannot be tolerated, and child molesters are right up there at the top of the list. But go tell that to the lawyers. Go tell that to the judges. Go tell that to the congressmen and the senators. They're the ones who've changed the rules. The rest of us, even the murderers, we all know what's right, well, and good, and what you're supposed to do with a child molester. and I'm your host, Doug McBurney. Welcome back. Thank you. That ends the, that's at least, finishes for the moment the noise section of the show. One of my listeners said, he said, in between the noise parts, you know, I pick up a few good things here. Anyways, overall, it was a very encouraging message from one of my billions and billions of listeners. Billions and billions. Oh, that's that. I think I got to do this Bloomberg thing. Let me find this. Okay, so I should have said last week that I hate Michael Bloomberg, okay? Hate him. He is a socialist who wants to keep anyone who could compete with him in the area of business. He wants to keep them down now that he's already made it. He's one of the worst human beings on the planet. He's a baby killer. He's a homosexualist. He's an evil, wicked, rotten human being who should not be able to run for office because of how horrible he is. Yet he could come in second to Bernie. Okay, so I want to make it clear that I do not like Michael Bloomberg, but I got to hand it to him. At least on this, I got this out of the, where's it, from the Las Vegas Sun. Michael Bloomberg bought time on the massive video billboard that wraps around the front of a hotel there at Harmon Street in Las Vegas and the Las Vegas Strip. If you've ever been to Vegas, you can't miss this sign. It's 6 stories tall. It's huge. Well, he ran a rotating series of messages. Among them, Donald Trump cheats at golf. Ooh, that's a... Well, according to some sports writer, and I don't know who this guy is, Rick Riley, he wrote in a book that Trump cheats at golf. He says he throws his playing partner's balls into the water. He retakes shots without counting the strokes, and he throws balls out of bunkers. And he kicks the ball. And if he hits into the rough, he kicks the ball onto the fairway. In fact, he says he kicks the ball into the fairway so often that caddies call him Pele behind his back. Okay. Now, that may or may not be true. I don't know about the cheating at golf thing. I mean, that's between Donald Trump and God if he cheats at golf. But this is the one that got me. Michael Bloomberg bought this message and put it on the wraparound sign right there at Harmon across the street from the Cosmopolitan. Donald Trump went broke running a casino. Now, that's just funny. I'm sorry. And it's true. That one you can't... The golf thing, I've never played golf with Donald Trump, so I don't know. But the part about going broke running a casino, that absolutely did happen. All right. So, okay. Well, there you have it. And so anyway, I hate Michael Bloomberg, but I also don't worship Donald Trump. So, anyway. So, there you go. By the way, Michael Bloomberg's probably the first politician who's actually given it to Trump as good as he gets it from Trump. So, and if Donald Trump thinks he's rich, he's got nothing on Mike Bloomberg. I think Donald Trump may be worth $2 billion, maybe. His entire empire might be worth $2 billion. That's what he says, so it's probably worth around $700 million, knowing the way Trump operates. Michael Bloomberg, on the other hand, is worth somewhere between $40 and $60 billion. And he could probably tap $2 billion in cash at any moment if he needed the cash, so. Anyway, all right, so you've got a raging socialist, right? A raging socialist. Who else? There's nobody left. Buttigieg disappeared. He's gone. Hiawatha, Warren, Elizabeth Warren, gone. Forget it. The other one, Klobuchar, nobody ever heard of her. No one will ever hear from her again. You won't be able to find her with a GPS. She's so far gone. Who else? Why do I even care about the Democrat side? I really don't. All right, so let's move on from there. Now that I've mentioned a bunch of creeps and perverts and weirdo. Oh, I got blocked. I tried to post a comment on Facebook, and for the first time ever, they said I violated their community standards because I used that string of I was talking about creeps, weirdos, losers, homos, perverts. And queers, something like that. So, and believe it or not, Facebook got offended by that. So they did not allow my post to go up And so the person to whom the point I was trying to make was robbed of the point that I was trying to make, and it's very sad. I'm able to see the post, but nobody else is. They said I could try to reword it, but I just didn't because I didn't care. All right. Now, speaking of all that, that takes us deep into the bowels of the Straight to Hell file, where we have a report here from Yahoo News. If that's a news outlet, is that? I think it's the Associated Press. Anyway, the new animated film Onward, it's a Disney feature, introduces the first self-identified lesbian character into the Disney Pixar universe. There you go. So, you know, when I read this, I thought, really? This is the first time? I thought they introduced homos like 10 years ago at Disney. Anyway, this is the first self-identified lesbian. So this is the first specific type of homo. Anyway. The producer, Corey, says of the development of the self-identified lesbian, she says, you know, it just kind of happened. Yeah. The scene, you know, when we wrote it, it was just kind of fitting, and it opens up the world a little bit, and that's what we wanted. It's kind of happened. The director, Dan, says, it's a modern fantasy world, and we want to represent the modern world, which apparently representing the modern world to six-year-old children is to introduce them to a self-identified lesbian. That's why Corey and Dan are going straight to hell with jet rockets. Yes, that's why. That's why God created a hell. You people think God is mean. God is not mean. If God didn't create hell, we would have to spend eternity with these creeps. And who needs that? All right. So there you go. Go straight to hell with jet rockets. Everyone at Disney, you're on your way. You're on your way to roast for all eternity, you filthy, disgusting perverts molesting the minds of children. All right. Now, from molesting the minds, we go to reason number 1,118, to get or keep your children out of the government schools because they might get molested by the principal. That's the short way. What happened here, a former assistant principal has been sentenced to 2 years probation for allegedly, I don't think I have to go any further. Elizabeth Geisler entered a plea in which she didn't admit guilt, but she accepted that there's enough evidence to convict her. Okay, that's pretty interesting. That's very creative. A bunch of lawyers come up with all that. You don't have to admit you're guilty, but you have to admit that we have enough that we could convict you, and then we'll all act like that resembles something looking like it approaches justice is what we'll do. And then we're going to take away your teaching license so that you can't molest another 16-year-old boy like we all know you did, which this principal did. The prosecuting attorney says that he struck this deal. I like how he puts that. He struck a deal. He says some people might not understand the bargain that was struck in this case unless they really understand what the teacher had to give up, and that was basically her livelihood. She had to surrender her teaching license. She had to surrender her livelihood. And so because of that, we decided not to punish her in any way because that's such devastating punishment. Also, she doesn't have any prior criminal history, so we decided to, let's make a deal. So you molested a 16-year-old. Come on. We're all adults. We'll just move on. We'll just keep you out of the classroom, at least ostensibly, and for a while. Just disgusting. So here's my question. What's so disturbing about this? Well, there's many, many disturbing things about the story, but how is it that a 30-something-year-old woman with no criminal history whatsoever ends up molesting a 16-year-old male student? How does that happen? That a female, it's just hard for me to comprehend. How did we get there from wherever we were before this kind of thing happened? I mean, I had the band director, like when I was in, junior high school, the band director impregnated a cheerleader, right? And at least you could, it was disturbing, but you could at least relate to it, right? He's a man, she's a woman, or she's a girl. She was 17 or something. Anyway, he got run out of town on a rail. Her dad was going to shoot that guy. And so he had to flee for his life, the band director at my junior high school. he had to flee for his life. Actually, he was the band director in the high school. I think it was for the whole school, actually. It's a real small school. My graduating class was 32, so it was a real small school. And the band director impregnated the lead cheerleader and had to leave town. But like I'm saying, that at least you could relate to on a human level. But this is like a 30-something-year-old woman. I don't know. I think it is the ubiquity of pornography that is just corrupting people utterly. Even women. I don't know how we come back from this, that's all. I don't think we do. I think we have to go over the edge and crash and burn, and then whatever is left in the rubble, we have to start over. I just don't know how we come out of it. Case in point, we move now into the justice file, where I've got a story about Don Murray is his name. Let's see, what has Don done? Let's see, Donald Murray went viral in December after he and his tattoo were featured on an episode of Live PD. Have you watched this show? He asked. It's extremely attractive. Audio engineer. Live PD?
Yeah.
It's a cops-like show, right?
Can't watch it.
No,
not too long.
Not watchable. No. I don't like watching low-life criminals interacting with cops. I mean, it's interesting for about 3 minutes, and then it's like, okay, so now we're going to do this for a half an hour where you're going to be... Anyway... But anyway, this guy was on the show, and the reason I mentioned his tattoo is because on his forehead, he has a tattoo that reads, "Crime Pays." That's tattooed on his forehead. Talk about a career-limiting move. He eluded police during that episode of Live PD, but he was later taken into custody. And then he was released January 14th on his own recognizance, right? Mm-hmm. Well, guess what? Last week, now, over in Terre Haute, Indiana, Murray's been charged with resisting law enforcement, reckless driving, possession of methamphetamine, maintaining a common nuisance, and auto theft after an automobile pursuit there in Terre Haute, Indiana. And he's back in the slammer, still with his crime pays tattoo on his forehead. All right. So obviously, a warning to young kids. This should serve as a fine example of why not to get into drugs, because you might end up with something like crime pays tattooed on your forehead. And that doesn't go away, at least not easily. By the way, I said that was a career limiting move. It may not be so career limiting anymore. So I had to go to the mall to buy some clothing, because I've lost so much weight that all my clothing is hanging off of me and I'm starting to look like some sort of circus freak with the bubbly, puffy pants and the puffy shirts. And so I, not to brag or anything, but I've lost a lot of weight, so I had to buy some clothes, right? I got some clothes from a friend that was a lot thinner than I am. Was. A lot thinner than I was. But just not enough, you know, I need. So anyway, we go to the mall. We go to Macy's, right? We go to Macy's. We're in the mall at Macy's. I'm looking for clothes, which I hate. Just absolute hate shopping for clothing because I don't know what to wear. I always hate going into the dressing room and then you spend all this time taking it off, putting your wallet and your keys and your belt and this stuff, and then you put it, it doesn't fit. And you're like, all right, great. I wasted my time. So I'm going through that. It's a nightmare, right? So I decide I'm going to leave Macy's and go to some other store because I can't find anything at Macy's that fits me right. So I walk to another boutique, not realizing that this is an upscale men's boutique where they sell handcrafted, tailored clothing, Italian shoes. This is an expensive joint, right? I looked at the price of the first hat and I was like, okay, how can I figure out how to get out of here without looking like I was shocked by that price of that hat? And then the salesman comes from behind the counter. He has someone's name tattooed over his eyebrow, right? And he's got some other figure tattooed on his cheek. And he says, "Can I help you?" And I'm like, whoa, I have just slipped into an alternate universe. A high-end men's boutique with a homo with facial tattoos. Guy looks like he's right out of a gangster movie. I thought he was going to whip out a machine gun, right? He's got a little pricing gun in his hand. Anyway, so maybe the facial tattoos aren't as career limiting as they used to be, and that is a sad statement of fact about life in America today. Did he say hate? He said hate? Back when you could say hate. So he didn't really mean it. All right. Now, just to finish that story off, I ended up departing Macy's, and I departed the high-end fashion boutique with the facially tattooed massacre killer behind. And I ended up going to JCPenney and purchasing a pair of Levi's 501 buttonfly jeans is what I bought. Yep. And that's so I got one pair of jeans, and then I got one pair of dress slacks from back in Macy's, as a matter of fact. And then I must have tried on like 13 shirts, and none of them. Just forget about it. Next time I'm gonna have my extremely attractive audio engineer with me. See, she went shopping in another part of the mall, and that was disastrous. You need a woman. If you're a man and you're shopping for clothing, you need a woman there. Preferably the woman you're married to, because we just need help. That's all. I don't know what to do. I don't know what to do with clothes. All right. Let's go now. Let's see. What were we talking about? Oh, yeah. Crime pays tattoo. Let's go to an even worse human being. The New York Daily News reports that Charles Berry has walked out of court yet again. Last Saturday after his arraignment and his most recent arrest. Now, how many times has this guy been... Barry has served six stints in state prison and has been arrested six times since New York's new bail reform law took effect on January 1st, which we have covered extensively here on the Weekly Worldview. The only thing we hate more than Michael Bloomberg is bail reform in New York. One of the few things we hate more than Michael Bloomberg is decriminalizing crime so that your jails aren't clogged up. That's just ridiculous. Anyway, Charles Berry, he's a turnstile jumper, which if you don't live and travel in New York City, you may not know what that is. That's someone who jumps on the subway for free. And that used to be a crime, but it still is technically, but only technically. Anyway, he knew when he jumped the turnstile last Saturday that except for having to spend about 36 hours in police custody, there were no immediate consequences to his alleged crime, which includes charges that he snatched cash from people trying to use MetroCard machine. So this guy is not just a turnstile jumper. This guy is a robber. He's a highwayman, for crying out loud. You're trying to get your Metro card at one of those extremely confusing machines, especially if you're some hick from out of town like me. You're trying to figure out, how much money am I going to need on this subway ride? How much does a subway cost? You try to ask someone in New York, how much does a subway cost? They look at you like you've just threatened them, right? They look at you like you're a hayseed. Anyway, so he's robbing people at the Metro card machine. He's jumping turnstiles. He gets arrested, and he's out in about 36 hours. And when he came out, he told the New York Daily News reporter, quote, "I'm famous. I take $200, $300 a day of your money, cracker. You can't stop me, cracker. Bail reform, it's lit." It's lit, L-I-T. I guess I think it means it's good, or that he's happy with it. Yeah, it's lit. Bail reform is lit. Uh-huh. It's the Democrats. The Democrats know me and the Republicans fear me. You can't touch me. I can't be stopped. Unquote. That's Charles Berry, serial scofflaw, robber, and just laughing right in all of our faces as he steals our money and robs us blind and just laughs at us. All thanks to the criminally insane asylumees who are running New York City under naked communist. I can't even think of his name. De Blasio. Naked communist. Filthy, disgusting, horrible human being. One of the worst human beings ever in the history of such things is currently the mayor of New York City. Worse even than Michael Bloomberg, if that's possible. And apparently it is. All right. Meanwhile, up in Canada, the socialist Greens have been threatening to sabotage the infrastructure of Canada if the Canadian government doesn't do something dramatic about global warming. Canadian National Railways is now investigating after one of its trains derailed in Quebec. They believe someone purposely set something on the tracks in order to derail the train. The incident is under investigation. So whenever you think of Canadians, does the term sabotage or terrorism ever cross your mind? Never crosses my mind. I think of like maple syrup and hockey pucks, right? Icicles when I think of Canada. Moose, you know? But terrorists... saboteurs? I just never... But here we are. The Canadian Greenies who have been... who've had their angst jacked up to all-time high levels by Greta Thunberg and the like. They very well may be carrying out acts of terrorism against their fellow Canadian citizens, eh? Scary. Hey. Eh? All right. So, and this is the thing about the left, folks. Oh, in fact, let me get to this. Where's this story out of Germany? Hold on a second. Here it is. So in Germany, I don't know if you were paying attention. You may not have been. There's so much bloodshed and murder in the world that it's hard to catch it all. But here, a terrorist shot dead 9 people in a German town before killing himself and his mother. His father narrowly escaped, fled the house. And then this murderer left a note in a video claiming that certain people have to be exterminated. The places he targeted are popular with the migrant community, Kurds and Turks and other people like that. And so the reason I'm going to this article is because throughout the article, the reporters call this man a far-right terrorist. A far-right terrorist, right? He's far-right because he hates migrants? Nobody even knows what right is anymore. And here's the thing about right and left, folks. Is right does not murder innocent people or derail trains or break windows or set things on fire or murder hundreds of millions of people. It's the left that does that. It's the left consistently through the long arc of human history. If you study it, you'll see that it's not the right. You'll see that, in fact, the people that they call far right, they're not right. They're left. Right means right, by the way. Right means correct and good. It's the left that burns things, breaks things, and murders people. And it's not this guy's not a far-right terrorist. Just because he's a racist, that makes him far-right? You know what it is we've allowed these urinalists to co-opt the language to where anything that's bad and evil and racist is now considered right. When that's not correct, it's not right, okay? No, it's the left that murders. It's the left that derails trains. It's the left that will put Bernie Sanders in office and kill 100 million people. No, I don't think Bernie Sanders is going to win the election. I do believe he will be the nominee. I believe that Bernie Sanders is the George McGovern of our times. And Donald Trump is the Nixon, I suppose. I don't know. History tends to repeat itself. It's like a wash cycle. It's like a laundry room. History is. So we've got Bernie Sanders is McGoverning it up for the Democrats. And it's interesting, and it's kind of, you can chuckle at it and call him crazy Bernie and all that. If Bernie Sanders ever takes over America, he and his henchmen will murder 100 million people. And that's just figuring out who they're going to start to murder. They'll murder 100 million. Just deciding who to get to. All right. Now, meanwhile, we go from Bernie Sanders back into the war file, where a young man, let's see, what's I have his name here, Khalid Hiba, and his family fled the war in Syria 7 years ago. They escaped Damascus by the skin of their teeth, ended up in Egypt, and then somehow arrived in the United States of America 3 years ago, and no doubt they got off the plane, got down on their hands and knees, and kissed the ground. They made it to America from that hellhole Syria. So few have gotten out of there, but he did. Him and his mother and his father. Well, Khalid was killed Friday when he was delivering pizza in West Baltimore. So he escapes the fires and the shells and the mines and the machine guns and the enfilades of Syria and is cut down delivering pizza in West Baltimore, which resembles a war zone more and more and on a fairly regular basis. Have a hard time calling that noise. All right, Stevie. Yes, yes. Khalid Hiba survives Syria, does not survive Baltimore, indeed. Meanwhile, from the murder-suicide file, Philip Haney is a former Department of Homeland Security official, served under the Barack Hussein Obama administration, and he testified. Let's see here now. He testified before the Senate back in 2016, where Mr. Haney asserted that the Department of Homeland Security ordered him to delete hundreds of files of people with links to Islamist terrorist groups. And furthermore, Haney claimed, he argued that authorities could have prevented several terrorist attacks in the United States if the DHS had not scrubbed the specific data to which he testified. Now, I don't remember hearing anything about this ever, so this is all news to me. I didn't know that we had scrubbed data that maybe could have prevented terrorist attacks. I had never heard of Philip Haney. And he testified in 2016 in front of the Senate? This is the first time hearing about this. And the only reason we're hearing about this, maybe you all were very familiar with this case. But somehow, I think not. Because generally, I hear of stuff. But I didn't hear about this. And the only reason I'm hearing about it now is because Philip Haney has been found dead of a gunshot wound to the chest. And authorities have said the gunshot wound appears to be self-inflicted. Really? Gunshot wound to the chest, self-inflicted. That's not the first assumption I would make. He's dead. He had plans, listen to this, people around him doubt the fact that he committed suicide, by the way. He had plans to publish another book exposing the Obama administration. He had been in contact with top officials at DHS about possibly returning there to work, and he was engaged to be married. And then he shoots himself in the chest. Okay. Oh, one other thing. Haney had told multiple people, and this has been confirmed by two anonymous sources, according to people inside the Washington Examiner, he said, quote, "If I am found dead, it wasn't suicide," unquote. Not to put too fine a point on it, but if I am found dead, it wasn't suicide. And now he's been found dead of apparent self-inflicted wound, apparently. Okay. That's the murder-suicide file. That's because we didn't know where to put it. We didn't know if it was a murder or a suicide, but we're pretty sure it's not a suicide, at least here at the Worldview. Color me skeptical. All right, where was Hillary Clinton on that Saturday? All right, now, from there, we go to the politics file, where Donald Trump has named Richard Grenell the director of national intelligence. I'm sorry, the acting director of national intelligence, which means you go, cut, and then he acts. I don't know. He's the acting director of national intelligence, Richard Grenell. You may recognize Richard Grenell's name. Richard Grenell is the current ambassador to Germany, and he's a homo. Well, Grenell is also a staunch Trump loyalist, according to this report here from CNN. And a CNN, reporters, talking heads, other Democrat governing officials, and even some Republicans are dismayed, shocked even, at the fact that Donald Trump would name someone with zero intelligence experience as the acting director of national intelligence. Everyone's outraged and nervous. Even Republicans are somewhat disconcerted that Donald Trump has named a non-intelligence guy as the director of national intelligence. Now, the fact that Grenell knows zero about intelligence, that doesn't really bother me that much, because this is a political appointment. The director of national intelligence doesn't have to know anything about intelligence. He has to know how to manage people. That's okay. And so you could appoint someone who's anyone who's run a small to medium sized business could be the director of national intelligence. What bothers me is the fact that he's a homo doesn't seem to matter to anybody. The director of national intelligence is acting like he's married to a man, and we're supposed to just all go along with it. Okay. Me, personally, I'm not going to go along with it. The guy is, he's a homo, and he's married. He's acting like he's married to a man, which means he's mentally unbalanced, which means he should not be the director of national intelligence. And not because he doesn't have intelligent experience, not because... What did I just say? I said, not because he doesn't have intelligence experience, but because he's a homo. That's why. Golly. All right. But this is where we are now. It really doesn't matter anymore. And in fact, most people think I'm a bigot, right? I'm bigoted because I notice that he's walking around acting like he's married to another man. You're not even supposed to notice that, right? You're just supposed to give them both a peck on the cheek when they come into your dinner party. All right. Meanwhile, let's go from there, as distasteful as all that was, to the Islamic State file. That's right, Iran, the original Islamic State. Let's see. The United States Commission on International Religious Freedom. Let's see. Who is that? It's an independent bipartisan federal government entity that monitors, analyzes, and reports on threats to religious freedom. Okay, well, that's all well and good, I suppose. Although I don't really think that's a just function of a legitimate government. But hey, here we are. We got the ambassador to Germany and the director of national intelligence walks around with another man. They got rings on their finger. They act like they're married. So hey, we're pretty far down the rat hole, ladies and gentlemen. United States Commission on International Religious Freedom is reporting that elements in Iran are threatening the tomb of Esther and Mordecai in Hamadan, Iran. Uh-huh. Members of the Iranian Basij attempted to raid the tomb of Esther and Mordecai in an act of revenge against the Israelis-Palestinian peace plan put forward by President Trump. That's right. The Iranians are losing their mind that someone is, that it may be established amongst the nations that Israel will be allowed to exist. The Iranians are just going nuts. And so Iranian authorities, this is according to the Jerusalem Post, the Iranian authorities are threatening to destroy the historic tomb and convert the site into consular offices for Palestine. That's right. Now, those of you may or may not be familiar with the story of Esther and Mordecai. Esther and Mordecai, the Jerusalem Post reminds us, were biblical Jewish heroes who saved their people from a massacre in the story known as Purim. Now, what they're leaving out here is not only did they save their people from a massacre, did Esther and Mordecai, but they did it in Persia, which is now called Iran. And so there's a pretty good chance that this tomb there, the tomb of Esther and Mordecai, there's a pretty good chance it's actually real, because they probably died in Persia and were buried in Persia. And now the Iranians are going crazy and they want to destroy. By the way, one of the best stories in the Bible, if you want to read a story with your kids in the Bible, the story of the book of Esther is probably one of the best places to start. All you young parents out there, I've made it a habit to read a chapter of the Bible every night that I'm home. If I'm not on the road, I read a chapter of the Bible with my kids. And we were looking and trying to find out if there are any books we hadn't read yet. And there's only a few, the minor prophets, the really, really depressing ones, where God is just cursing Israel left and right and promising to do all these horrible things to them. And so we started going through. What are we in now? We are in the book of Joel. Joel, it's a rough one. Joel, and then there's Micah. Oh, really brutal, brutal. And then what's the other one? There's another one that's just brutal. But we've gotten through. I can't remember off the top of my head. But anyway, we're going through the minor prophets where God is so mad at Israel. We're going to get all those out of the way. And then we'll go back to Esther, because it's a really, it's an awesome story. Uplifting. And it helps the kids appreciate the historical narrative of the Bible. And so I encourage you to, if you wanted to start reading the Bible with your kids, that'd be a great place to start. All right. And hopefully the Iranians don't destroy their tomb, for crying out loud. All right. So from there, we go to the personhood file, where we have a report on Tim Tebow again. Look at this. Tim Tebow's finally back in the news. He said, let's see, he was speaking at a Kansans for Life event earlier this month. It was a football-themed banquet hosted by Kansans for Life, which is an anti-abortion group. They like to call themselves pro-life. I like to call us anti-abortion, because I think there's more to the point. But he asked the question, what are you going to be known for? He asked the crowd, are you going to say Super Bowl, or are you going to be able to say we saved a lot of babies? He says he'd rather be known for saving babies than for winning Super Bowls. And, of course, we wish he could have done both. We certainly wish he could have done both, but John Elway's ego was too big and got in the way. And then a fine football career was derailed. And anyway, but I'm over all that. The Broncos are dead to me. Dead. Tebow went on to say, you see, my mom had doctors tell her that she needed to abort me, because if she didn't, it was going to cost her life. And they didn't even believe I was a baby. They talked to her like I was a tumor. Anyway, he goes on to say that his mom didn't believe them, or she did believe them. She thought she might die, but she decided to have the baby anyway, and that turned out to be Tim Tebow, which is pretty cool. All right, so there we go, Tim Tebow. Meanwhile, so there's a wonderful, uplifting story about a good guy. Here's a bad guy, a bad girl. A bad girl and a bad guy.
Oh, no.
Uh-huh. Lori Vallow has been arrested in Hawaii months after her two children, Tylee and Joshua, were last seen. She's now facing multiple charges, including two felony counts of desertion and non-support of children, according to a complaint filed with an Idaho court. Joshua was reported missing in November, and police discovered that his older sister, Tylee, was also missing. So you know something bad happened when the police discover that the sibling has been missing. The mom didn't come out and just say that. Anyway, detectives asked Vallow about her son's whereabouts in November. She told them her son was staying with a friend in Arizona. When police reached that friend, she told the police that Joshua was not with her and had not been there for several months. A week later, the friend called police saying that both Vallow and her new husband, Chad, had asked her to lie about the child's whereabouts, but she refused. Nobody has seen or heard from Joshua and Tylee since September of 2019. Vallow and her husband fled their Idaho home when authorities began looking for the children. And they've been discovered in Hawaii. And if there's anything approaching justice left on the planet, they'll be charged with murder. It's just horrible. Just horrible. How do you go from having two children to wanting to kill those two children? How do you get there from wherever you were before that? I just can't wrap my head around that. But that's where they are right now. Just unbelievable. Unbelievable. Meanwhile, Giorgio Armani is a fashion designer who you may have heard of. Well, at the ripe old age of 85 years old, Giorgio Armani has finally decided to stand up and take responsibility for the crimes his entire industry has committed against women for his entire adult life. Giorgio Armani accused the fashion industry last Friday of raping women with short-lived trends and sex-driven marketing, Giorgio Armani said. He said, women keep getting raped by designers, by us, he said. He said, it's time I say what I think. You know, Giorgio, you could have said something like 40 years ago. You could have said something 30 years ago, 25 years ago. You're 85 years old, right? You got one foot in the grave. You're so rich, you couldn't spend all the money if you tried. And now you want to stand up and take responsibility for what you have committed against women? Anyway, it doesn't come off well to me, Giorgio. Anyway, the whole fashion world is disgusting and creepy. Those people are a bunch of homos and molesters and weirdos and creeps and perverts and queers and yuck. Anyway, all right, so I think that's it. That's all I got. What can I say, Giorgio Armani? Get out of here with that. All right. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for tuning in. I want to thank my friends at American Right to Life and at Real Science Radio over there on the Real Radio. Check them out. And, of course, my other brother, Darrow, who makes it all happen here in the Weekly Worldview Studios. Should the Lord tarry, we will return next week. And until then, may the grace of God go with you and may the peace of Jesus Christ be upon you.